Thanks for listening to the Nice Podcast. I'm Dave Delaney. If you haven't noticed, we've taken a little bit of a hiatus over the last several months. A big revelation was found. I have ADHD, and that explains a whole lot. And of course, naturally, as a veteran podcaster, I started another podcast all about it, and it's called ADHD Wise Squirrels, and you can find it at wisesquirrels.com or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Just search ADHD Wise Squirrels. Pop over and have a listen. Let me know what you think. Thanks.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Stocks up. Plummeted. If you had crypto, good chance you lost it all. I was a customer of FTX, so I did lose. And it all sucks, but suffering is optional. I don't have to suffer from this or worry, right? I can just be, you know, if you think about it, most people spend their time in their minds worrying about the regretting something from the past or worrying about the future.
Yes.
And not being like, are you in danger right now? Generally, the answer is no.
Nice
with Dave Delaney.
Welcome to the Nice Podcast, all about communication, collaboration, and becoming better leaders. I'm your host, Dave Delaney from FutureForth.com, where we help folks retain talent, improve culture and communication so you have happier, more connected teams. Today, I'm speaking with Loïc Lemur. Loïc is a 7-times entrepreneur, investor in 100 startups, co-founder of PAWA, Conscious Conference and Community. And he's a sun dancer and trained with, now I want to make sure I got the name right, Yawanawa, the tribe in the Amazon forest, which is incredible. We're gonna get to all this. Loïc, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Yeah. So what, I always like to start these episodes with the question, what is the nicest thing someone has done for you recently? I have a feeling I know what you're going to say.
I'm sorry, the nicest thing? What did you say?
Yes, the nicest thing someone has done for you recently.
Oh, the sun?
I had a hunch.
Yeah, my partner Magdalena just gave birth to my fourth son and yes. our first kid. So yeah, that was exactly 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
It's amazing. That's Falco, right?
Yeah, Falco, FALCO, like Falcon, just no N.
Right. That's amazing. So tell me about that. And you have like a really cool Substack that I encourage, and I'll include links to everything here so folks can check it out. But you've been also recording some podcasts, audio through a Substack, and you shared the magic of life, gave me a new son, Falco. So tell me a little bit about that experience and having a new baby, because your sons are older, right? How old are your sons now?
My sons are 21, 25, and 27. And I'm 50 years old. So it's been a long time. I didn't have this experience more than 20 years ago. And also we had a home birth, which is the first time I see that. So that was very special, of course, because it's very different in many ways.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it's incredible. I mean, I'm 50 now as well, and my kids are 17 and 18. 16 and 17. And I couldn't imagine having another kiddo, but I have friends who do. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's very interesting because at 50, I don't have the same relationship to a baby, for example. I have to say I was extremely, not that I'm not busy now, but I was a kid having a kid. I was my first boy, I was 23. So I was really working on my first startup actually already, day and night. And I didn't really pay enough attention, I would say. Now I'm paying much more attention. And the work I've done also, like the spiritual or consciousness work I have done is makes it also different, because I would say, I don't know how weird you want to get with me or not, but I would say I feel the energy of Falco, of my baby, in a way that I was not aware before. I was very very numbed or not sensitive, and now I am so very sensitive. So yeah, I have him in my arms. It's very special. When I'm laying down in bed with him, like naked or near naked on my chest, it's very, very special. So I would say very, very special. Very, very, like I feel it's precious, you know. And also at 50, I hope a lot, but I don't know how much I have left, you know. So it's interesting also to think this way. What a gift to be able to have such life energy in my arms while I'm 50. So, yeah.
Do you feel, because you've always been, and I've always, like, I think the first time we met was we were on a panel together at South by Southwest Interactive, and I think it was like 07, Saul Colt and Chris Brogan, and I'm trying to remember, that might have been
Yeah.
So you've been this person in the sort of tech entrepreneurial space, at least in the social sort of space, for as long as I remember. Tell me a little bit, let's back up a little bit and tell me a little bit about your history growing up in what part of France are you from?
I was born in south of France in a city called Perpignan, which is not far from Barcelona in Spain.
Okay, nice. And what brought you along on this sort of entrepreneurial journey? Because you've always been this prolific entrepreneur and investor. So tell me a little bit about how you first got into that, into that sort of, and what bit that entrepreneurial bug.
Oh, that's a very easy one. Both my parents were entrepreneurs. They were selling sailing boats in south of France. Oh, wow. But I've never seen them work for anyone else than them. So it was kind of natural for me that I had no choice than create something. And so I never worked for anyone else than me since I'm 20, yeah. 23 when I graduated from that business school there in France. And I like the saying of we create our own reality. And my reality was, it's normal that I'm going to start my business. Like, there is no other option. Mm. And once you start thinking this way, well, you start your own business because there is no other option. So that's how I did it. I did it when I was 23. I was in the third year of my business school, and I started a web agency in 1996 when nobody knew what a website was. And I started telling everybody they needed a website. And they're like, what? Like, again, 1996, like nobody had websites. Very few people there at the time. It was very, very early. So, yeah, so I started doing that. And I got my first client from an internship. I was doing my last year internship there. And it was the car manufacturer Peugeot, which your American listeners won't know what it is, but it's a very famous French brand, at least all around Europe and Latin America as well. Anyway, and And I was there doing an internship, and I told my teacher, hey, my manager, you should really do a website. And we ended up doing the first ever used cars website in France. And then someone was happy, then I got another one and another one, and very fast I ended up with 100 people web agency. That's how I started.
100 people?
Yeah, it was very popular. I was the only one. So we were like maybe two or three web agencies in Paris, to be serious. But it went very fast. I had like luxury brands, I had perfume brands, I had like Unilever, Procter & Gamble. Like, we were too busy making websites. But we're talking 20 years ago. We're talking 27 years ago.
Yeah.
And and then I got acquired. I was 26. Well, like basically 3 years after starting, or 2 years after starting, I got acquired by BBDO, Omnicom, which is a large advertising group. And I became their BBDO Interactive France. And that's how I started. Then, frankly, I got bored because I was suddenly in a large group and I didn't like it. So it was like the fish was in the fish tank. So I started something else again and something else again and something else. That's how I started seven startups. But the most important thing I've done in my life was, I think, because, you know, it's like at 50, I look at, okay, what is, like, how do you measure success? Is it money? Is it recognition? Is it helping others? And now I tend to measure as in impact, right? So how did it help the world, others? And like none of these did really do that much. I mean, they made money, but the one that really had an impact, I would say, was a conference called Le Web, which I started also kind of randomly in 2003. I was blogging. I learned to blog, and I was also kind of the only one. And I loved it so much. Like, just for your listeners who might be younger than me, in 2003, there was no Facebook, no Twitter, no LinkedIn, none of that. And no iPhone and no Android.
Right.
I know it's difficult to imagine, right? And so I started that that conference, and we were 200 bloggers from all around the world in Paris. And in a few years, it became 4,000 people, 80 plus countries, the place where Jack Dorsey launched Square, or the Uber guys, Travis and Garrett, invented Uber because they could not find a taxi at my conference right in front of me. For your fund, they also offered me to invest, and I said no. But that's the thing I've, you know, since you don't ask, that's the one I'm the most proud of. It was called Le Web. It became the largest tech conference in Europe. Then I sold it, and then Paddy with his Web Summit became way larger, and that's okay because I already had sold, so you could get bigger, no problem. So Web Summit is in Lisbon now. Yeah. But anyway, so I did that like 10 years before.
What's it like being I have my own sort of experiences being an early adopter with things. What got you interested in the tech world? Like, were you, because you're talking about 96, so 96 is really the beginning of the internet. Were you communicating online before that? Like I ran a BBS on my Commodore 64 back in like 83, 84. I was a kid, but that was my first taste for like online communication. Before that, it would have been like CB radios and things, but
yeah. I had that too. I was on the 9600 modem, CompuServe.
Yeah.
So right, that puts us back when 92, 93, right?
Yeah.
You are 88. That must be you might be even earlier. But yeah, I remember that. No, I always had that bug. I always felt that the internet would change everything, and it did. It's just that I thought it would change it much more for the better than it did. But that's another story. Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about that too. So tell me, so and with that first startup, you know, the web development agency and that really taking off, what were your experiences in managing people? You said you had like 100 employees. So how was that something? I mean, at 23, I mean, God, I had my brain. Well, our brains are literally not developed until you're 24. So tell me about that experience managing people. How was that for you? Was it good? Was it hard?
I didn't like it that much. I honestly didn't like it. Like if I were to do, well, I'm kind of doing a business now, but I would rather have someone like a CEO or even a CEO, not be the CEO myself. Like, I would prefer that. I didn't like it that much. And then, you know, as an entrepreneur, I went through, 5, 6, 7 startups. And so I also had to fire people, which is terrible, right? Like you have to do that. I didn't like it. It creates it's difficult, honestly. It's very difficult. It's rewarding, but it's difficult because you have to. I don't know. Like I think I am doing it completely differently now. But the let's see, all the motivational stuff, right? Like I don't know, it might be part my age, part my all the time I spent doing consciousness work, that I can't really lie anymore. Mm-hmm. And when I say lies, I'm saying it in a good way, like making reality better than it is. That's what I mean. I would have never gone anywhere in business if I was lying all the time. But what I mean is a little controversial, I'm sorry, especially if you talk to marketing people in this audience. You know, I remember Seth Godin, right, who wrote this book like a long time ago, All Marketers Are Liars.
Right.
And you could say that of business people. All business people are liars in a way, or entrepreneurs, because you tend to make reality better than it is, right? It's like... how many times did I promise stock options as a CEO, as a founder, shares, you know, based on my dreams? So I wasn't really a liar, but it didn't always turn out to be what I thought it would, right? Sure. And then you have some employees who get angry or get, you know, I really remember perfectly well having one day shut down a business. You have to do that as an entrepreneur. Like everything I did didn't work. A lot of things I did worked, a lot didn't. And I got like some really, really angry employees, I remember, telling me, well, but you're firing me. I'm like, well, I'm shutting down the business. So yes, you know. And all these tensions are difficult. It's because stress is not good for us, whether you're on the side of a manager or the employee. So it's difficult to, I don't know. I don't know if I'm clear. I'm just saying, what I'm saying is that there are lots of, if it's not lies, over-promising in business, let's call it over-promising things.
Yeah.
And you kind of get in that game, right? The advertising promises you something, generally a product better than it is. How many times have you bought something and then been disappointed by what you bought, right? And I can't really do that anymore. I don't want that in my life much.
And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I read a great Sam Harris book about lying that was really fascinating kind of take. I mean, his view is never to lie.
Yeah.
Like just never lie. And you know, there's ways that you can handle things tactfully, but at the same time, you know, never lying, I think, is I mean, it's a good way to be. It's a good approach to not just business, but to life.
Yeah, it's I don't know, either edging on that work that I've done, but I don't.
Right.
It might make me more cautious. Overcautious, right? Like, Because that's the business game, is to oversell. As a sales guy, as an entrepreneur, as a startup guy, as someone raising funding, you have to oversell. You have to, like we call it, communicate the vision, yeah. Right? But like, what's the limit between, I think I've always been honest, or I wouldn't be here. You know, I would have, like, people who are not honest lose most of their supporter or friends. Mm-hmm. So it's not that I look at my past as I have not, but I would be more in an extreme honesty right now. You know, it's like, I don't know, 10 years ago, if you told me, okay, if I told you, which I did many times, mm-hmm. I'm raising $8 million on, let's say, 15 million valuation, which I have done. Mm-hmm. Here's why, you know, here are the business numbers and everything. And today I would look at you and say, well, I absolutely know that this business plan I'm showing to you, like, I have actually no clue. you see, like, that's most business plans. And that's the thing, is like, VCs know that, investors know that, and they still invest, but they know that. Yeah. But so it's a game. The entrepreneur knows that he doesn't know shit about his business plan, like most of the time, they have no idea, right? So it's more of a trend. So look at crypto, right? Everybody was raising. And now there is no trend on crypto anymore, very little. Like, good luck raising any funding these days. Really hard.
Yeah. Well, that's good reason there. The whole term Web3 irks me. but to your point, I mean, I think approaching business in an honest way is definitely a nice thing to do. And it's a good way. And it does, to your point, it comes back. I mean, you know, we haven't had too many interactions besides kind of at South By over the years. And obviously online, I've always held you in a nice regard. I've always thought fondly of you.
Thank you. So there you go. Likewise.
Yeah, yeah. Even in the days of Seismic, and I've got to bring up Seismic because for those listening, Louis created, you could describe it better, but Seismic was a video platform first and then a social media dashboard. Is that correct? Or am I mixing it up?
It was a social, it was an attempt at doing a video social network.
Yes.
Right. And that was before Facebook, before iPhone, and before Android. So we were doing it we had to use a Flash player or something, recorder, yes. On the browser. So I did everything wrong in one way, which is 10 years too early. Yeah. And that's a mistake an entrepreneur does. Too early is no good. You have to be at the right timing. Too late is bad, right? You and I were just laughing about this, like, good luck trying to launch a crypto product right now. Like, maybe in 6 months or a year it will have come back, but right now near impossible to raise funding, so it's too late. But 6 months ago or 12 months ago, my son actually just raised millions on a crypto project. It closed before everything crashed, so good timing. With Seismic, I was literally 10 years too early. You could say it was a version of the Instagram stories, maybe video, maybe a little TikTok. Some people post that, which makes me happy, of course, that I had done TikTok 15 years before TikTok. But too early, really, but it very small. But those who were in it still talk to me about it.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I was a user of Seismic, and I enjoyed using it and meeting. I remember chatting a lot with Laura, with Pistachio. Like, we were both pretty heavy users of Seismic back in the day. And
it was like a bar, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, it was it was a social network before the term really was a thing, right? So, you know, and I think there were other, like, I remember there was a great audio type of service called Udders or Udderly back then, and I always found, see, it's funny, Louis, because to me, I've always for years, I thought of myself as an early adopter in technology and a technologist, and I worked for hardware companies and software companies and blah, blah, blah. But what I realized was that I'm only really interested in using these mediums, these platforms, these services in order to connect with other humans, with other people. And for me, it's really about communication and podcasting and Seismic back in the day and social networks and all this stuff has always been about connecting with other people. Is that what kind of got you excited about the web?
Always, yeah. Yeah, that's how we know each other. Always, yeah. I don't know about this bug. Yeah, it's I'm doing another conference now. So I love connecting. So yeah, but the conference is coming from the conference is coming from a community that I've built for a year and a half online called Power, which is about, it's not that big, it's about 400 people, but those 400 people are coming from like 30 countries, and I built the conference based on the community, but I did the community first, so yes, I have that bug. And we had we did the first event in Paris with about 36 countries flew in, first edition. So I love that. You know, it's not new. I was doing that for tech conferences. Now I'm doing this on a consciousness event.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit about Power. What's the story behind it, and let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, Power. So it's PAUA. Life.life, L-I-F-E, and if anyone wants to check it out. And the Power, it's very simple. I did a lot of consciousness work. So what does this mean? Well, when I was 40, I started, I divorced. So that got everything started. My life was shaken. And I kind of was looking for something else than, you know, like this successful, you know, trying to make another startup, right? And more recognition, so I was really going after either success with in the business world, which I reached, right? Somehow, of course, I'm no billionaire, but like if you look at building, I built businesses, so that was success. Then I had recognition. I was like 12 years in a row in Davos, the speaker at the World Economic Forum, and went to TED for 10 years, all that stuff. Like, as you said, we actually met talking on stage both together at South by Southwest. So I was doing like a lot of events talking. And so I had that recognition as well. And then I had, you know, made reasonable amount of money. Still, I was not happy, which, of course, we can get into the what's happiness or not. But
my dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
But I needed something else than that. And so I started meditating, and I really started looking, basically, which some people might call the middle-age crisis. I was talking recently to someone who told me the middle-age crisis is a thing, because it's actually a physical modification of the way the masculine brain works, where especially the modification in hormonal modification, you know, less testosterone probably, but then I'm not an expert. But it's basically a physical modification. And once that physical modification starts, then was like this crisis happens. And it definitely did happen to me. So I started meditating. I went to 10-day silent retreats. Then I started, I did years of therapy, like 5-6 years. Like in, not intense, but like once a week, so pretty intense. Then I did, at the same time, I looked at like the Burning Man, right? I did like after 12 years in a row in Davos, I did 8 years in a row at Burning Man. and that like still wasn't doing it. And then finally I did an ayahuasca ceremony in Brazil, where it's fully legal in the jungle, in the Amazon forest. And I loved it so much, I started working a lot, working as in spending time with indigenous. So I went to their villages, like really deep. It takes 3 days to go to their village in the Amazon forest. And I started learning with them a lot, and learning about plants, like trying maybe 30 or 40 plants and animal substances. I did very intense work, like 3 months completely isolated in the jungle, in a hut, not even in a village. They were just bringing me food. I would see only one person per day bringing me food, basically. So very, very intense work. And then I realized, you know, maybe the most important thing is to be conscious. Be conscious about everything that I'm doing. Like, what is it? How is it helping anything? My family, my friends, the world, you know? Even in a, it doesn't have to be ambitious. I don't have to save the Amazon forest. I wish I could with my two hands. But, you know, it starts with not damaging around you with what you eat, not damaging your own body, you know, like all the crap we can put in our body, or I did before. I stopped drinking 2 years ago entirely. Oh, congratulations. Yeah, I'm not saying anyone should, right? But how do you feel?
I feel great. I can sleep again. I feel great. I actually started meditating as well a couple of years ago and have a daily practice now, and did my first half day retreat, silent retreat. And I'm keen to do much more of that. So following your journey along your Substack and the stories that you're sharing about this journey is really inspiring. I'm not sure if my wife will let me leave to the Amazon quite yet.
But how many kids do you have?
I have two.
Oh, yeah. So how old?
16 and 17 years old.
Yeah. So you're still busy. My partner and my new family, I would say, with my son, won't let me go either. But I might make it compulsory. To be honest, I don't think I can not go back now that I have seen it. Yeah. But I will do 3 months, because 3 months is crazy. I was offline, no phone, no Mac, nothing. Like yeah. back to pre-internet. It's so amazing that I have got to taste this in 2022. And now it's something I remember so much that I want to get back to it.
Yeah, so what are some takeaways that you learned during the retreat, during, you know, your time there, meeting indigenous people?
Well, the main takeaway is that there is a lot of ancient technologies which exist that I had no idea about, and many people did, but not so many, to be honest. Like, people think, like, for example, the way they use the plants is drugs, and again, it's fully legal in Brazil. It's being decriminalized in most cities in the US. San Francisco just did. But yet it's still called drugs, ayahuasca, right? And there, kids, just to give you an idea, kids take it as of age five, right? And they drink ayahuasca in the tribe I work with once to twice a week, twice a week. It's very connect. That's the way they connect with the divine, as they say. And if you take it, it feels like doesn't. I mean, like, any definition of a drug, as in, one, it's entertaining. Well, it's not. Two, it's addictive. Well, it's not. because good luck, like you can't, you know, like try to force yourself to drink that. You're going to purge, vomit. It's really hard to take and it's not addictive. And it's kind of more the contrary. Like most people I know took it once or twice, or maybe they do some walk, they do a week or 10 days there, then never again in their whole life. Right. So it's really like not, honestly. It doesn't have the characteristics of a drug at all. And so I've seen it as a technology. Like I have my iPhone and I go there to discover what my brain can do that I didn't know was able to do. So I discovered that world. But then I will say quickly I came back to Earth, right? Like because I was in Avatar there. So it's great, but when I go back to the US or Europe, well, there are no plants. And I also don't want to depend on tech substances to feel good. So I thought, what can I do? And you meditate. So now I meditate every day. Well, it's been a few years now, but I would say the meditation has changed like completely since I've done that work. Because I think what it does, and I think many people have done some research on it, even though it's new, because as you know, even research, scientific research was forbidden, and it still is in most countries. But it really reconnects parts of your brain that are either disconnected or that are like dark, that you don't use, basically. And now that I meditate, after all that work of reconnecting my brain, to make it simple, well, it's amazing. It's really amazing. I feel I see the world totally differently, calmer, more aware of everything, which is not only good news. Like, for example, if I take a plane, the lights are very, very bright, you know, to me. The sounds tend to be a little aggressive. So I really changed my way of life. I don't live in a city anymore. But like that's the gift of COVID. We can do so much now without living in a city.
And does it help to put things in perspective too? Because that's one thing I found is kind of rethinking things and also like slowing down in a moment long enough to just realize, and it can be as simple as, you know, going on Twitter and being pissed off at something you see and taking a second to be, you know, this is something I've been telling a lot of people about is the importance of understanding that. Well, social networks, especially, you know, it's now in their best interest to get us to click on links and engage, and in order to engage you got to be upset, and so we see things, the algorithms feed us things to get us upset, and what I find so often now is I see something that irks me or just upsets me for a second, and I'm like, no, it's not going to happen, it's not going to upset me, forget it. And try to move on to something more positive. Have you had like similar sort of experiences, or how do you handle that?
Well, I'd say it's like a permanent. My day now, awake day, turned into a permanently awake state. You know, permanently, meditative, awake as in awaken, right? So, for example, if someone tells me something that is unpleasant, I see it and I don't react, or I try not to, because that's the training of meditation, as you know, is equanimity, as they say, right? It's okay. I'm pissed off right now. let's not react, right? Let's just, you know, like why, even my partner, why is she telling me this way or talking to me this way? And how can I not react to that? And generally you realize that it's like in meditation, you know, when you meditate and suddenly you need to go to the bathroom, right? That happened to you. Or you really want to stand up. You're like, okay, like screw that. I don't want to meditate. And you don't. You train your mind to just go through that. Generally, it's okay. Yeah, it turns out we can hold pretty long without going to the bathroom if we train our mind a bit. But it's the same here. It's like, okay, I'm getting upset, or this person is upsetting me, or this situation is upsetting me. But really, if you think about it, it's generally not that bad. It's not an immediate danger, right? Yeah. Like there's a friend that posted on Twitter recently. He said, "Hey, like Twitter is so important to me. I don't know what I would do without it." You know, like something like this. And I said, "Well, no, not really, because if you were on a deathbed right now, you would not find Twitter very important." And that, like, I would say back to what I learned in the jungle is this permanent, like permanent thinking that there is another space, right? It's like there is something else more important. The space where we go every night when we sleep, the space where we're from before we were born. And now I'm taking risk. I'm talking about reincarnation and all that stuff, right? But well, I'll do it. The space where we go when we die, and. For me, when I go to sleep, and yes, I also sleep much better now without alcohol. Way, way better. I dream. Another gift of the jungle was lucid dreaming. So I have this other life during my nights. Almost every night, I have that, and it's fascinating. But so. There is something else, right? Like, for example, I feel like I'm getting a lot of information through my dreams. I give you an example. We're talking about worrying and being upset. I didn't have exactly that, but I was dreaming that I was worrying, not upset, but I was worrying. And I was worrying, and I had this voice tell me in the dream, right? So it's a dream. It's like, why do you worry about this? Oh, no, are you worrying now? And I was like, no. But I'm dreaming. It's normal that I don't worry. You're like, well, if you see, I have this kind of weird dialogue sometimes with creatures in my dreams. I came back very much to a kid stage, which is so fun. I discover, and the voice was like, hey, why do you worry during when you're awake if you cannot worry when you sleep and dream? Mm. And I'm like, that's a good question, and that stayed in my mind. As in, this is so right. Like, why do you, like, worrying is optional. Yeah. It can be shit, like right now, right? Stocks are plummeted. If you had crypto, good chance you lost it all. I was a customer of FTX, so I did lose. It all sucks, but suffering is optional. I don't have to suffer from this or worry, right? I can just be... You know, if you think about it, most people spend their time in their minds worrying about the regretting something from the past or worrying about the future.
Yes.
And not being like, are you in danger right now? Generally, the answer is no.
Yeah, no, that's great. Actually, I was seeing a therapist last year, and that's something we hit on is exactly to your point, where if you focus too much on the past, that can lead to depression. And if you focus too much on the future, that can lead to anxiety. And so by focusing on the present, it's not to say you don't think about the future. Cause I mean, if you're running a business or a conference or you family, I mean, you're going to think about the future and you're also going to reflect on the past. But the point is not to dwell on it too much. And the fact that you can't change the past and you can't change the future, all you can change is like right now.
Yep. That's the only thing you can do. Yeah. So am I in danger right now? Not really. My nose is a little clogged, which I regret, because you can probably hear that on the podcast, but it's okay. So it's not my normal voice, but
What are your thoughts on the level of... This is something I think about a lot where, as it pertains to this, where of privilege... Of the fact that, like, we're financially secure enough so that, like, I often wonder whether somebody who is not financially well off or even in good, like, perhaps they're struggling financially, how they can embrace mindfulness and meditation. I mean, how they can even quiet their minds long enough when the stresses are really real.
I don't think that's Dave. With all respect, I don't think that's related. I don't think I might look like a sound like a like an asshole saying that, but let me elaborate. If you look at most people who go to monasteries or do a lot of spiritual work, they actually don't have money. So it's kind of normal for them to, like, even the monks don't have homes. They have, I don't know how you say it in English, but they give up on everything.
Yeah.
Owning. How do you, is there a word for that in English? Like this phenomenon of not owning anything.
What? Yeah, like, okay. Materialism, I guess, or being non-materialistic, maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. There is a term in French which is definitely to describe that. Like, if you want to become a monk tomorrow, you give up all your wealth. Like, you close your bank account. Yeah. You live on charity, basically.
Yeah, my father was a Catholic priest before I was around. And he was a fully ordained priest. And yeah, in order to enter the priesthood, he had to give up everything. But that's a point in your life that if you reach that point, if you have a family and a business and things like that, I mean, you could in theory just leave and become a monk, but, or a priest or whatever, but most people still have to, keep existing. I don't know.
No, for sure. What I mean is it's not, you can be very poor and very doing a lot of consciousness work or a lot of spiritual work, right? There is a lot of people, if you go to Cusco in Peru, if you go to Costa Rica, Bali, there is a lot of people who have no money there. And they live a very non-stressful life. And so I guess the stress you're describing is more coming from someone who has kind of a reasonable way of life and loses everything. That the difference becomes very, very important. But I would argue that many people who have a lot are way more stressed.
It's interesting too, because I think, I was talking to someone a while back about success and happiness, and my business isn't where I want it to be. But at the same time, I've got, I have a wonderful wife who's my best friend. I've got two awesome kids and a nice home. And, we have a cute dog. I've reached these successes in my life that money can't buy. I mean, money can buy a house and a dog, but not a significant other and not great kids necessarily. And I think, I've reached these levels of success, and when I reflect on that, it makes me pretty happy about how life is and how it can be. So, tell me about when is the next conference?
Yeah, so I never answered your question, basically. But so Pawa is about that. So it's about, like, both business people who think there is more than just making money and profit to life, and everybody say, oh yeah, there is, but really like basically care about consciousness, want to learn something else. And then it's also for conscious/spiritual people who want to be surrounded by people who do something. So like business, it's like the intersection between business and consciousness. Business is spirituality. And the next one is very likely, we have not defined it yet, but in April or May in Miami. The last one was in Paris, and there will be another one in Paris in October, like last year. So we're working on Miami now, but it's, it's like I want to be cautious. The economy is pretty hard these days, so we need to make it very simple so that it doesn't it doesn't end up being a loss. So I'm still looking at it right now.
Well, keep me posted. I would love to, and I'll be sure to share links and information about it to our listeners. Okay, I want to move on to the lightning round to be respectful of your time here. What is a nice book that you recommend listeners check out?
Gosh, lights, so many right now that, let me see. What is this? I am, I'm reading one right now that I don't want to recommend, so I have to. Well, you'll have to cut that because now I'm getting very, very long.
No, you're okay.
No, but I like biocentrism recently. But if your answer is what books you recommend, I'm reading Morphic Resonance right now, which I don't recommend because it's very very complicated. I love the mysticism of sound and music, which is about Sufism, but it's not about Sufism. It's about sound and music.
Okay.
But how you get into spiritual places just with sound and music.
Oh,
very, very interesting. Yeah, highly recommend that. And if you want to learn about the story of humans and spirituality and religions, there is this book called Not in His Image, which I found great as well. It's a story of spirituality across religions, and I learned a lot reading it. Really like it.
Okay, cool. Thanks. And so a couple more questions. The first is, how is Loic nice to himself?
Meditating.
Nice. And if you had a billboard, what would it say?
He would say focus. Okay. Like get back. Well, basically, no. Focus on what matters.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I missed a few words. Focus on what matters.
I love it. Loic, this has been so great. How can people get a hold of you and connect?
Oh, very simple. So I have this newsletter, which I forgot to mention. So it's loic.substack.com, loic.substack.com. And I write twice a week, so I'm pretty prolific. And if people want to check it out, I also have a podcast there that I record myself. I tell stories from the jungle generally, or from things I lived.
It's really great. I highly recommend everybody check it out. And congrats again on Falco. That's so exciting.
Thank you, Dave. I'm having a lot of fun with Falco, and that it feels like a second life, but a second real life.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to the show today. Would you do me a favor? Leave a review. The reviews help others discover the show, and they mean a lot to me, so I would appreciate that. Did you know I am often hired as a keynote speaker for company retreats or for conferences? To find out more about that, you can visit DaveDelaneySpeaks.com. Music by Alistair Crystal at alistaircrystal.ca. We'll see you next time. And be nice.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcasts.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.